much that we could go into in the area of fat, but I would like to get into the area of protein, because the same thing can happen if you take protein and remove it from the natural food. You can, the same way that you did with the sugar and with the oil, remove all the bulk and all the fiber and all the vitamins and all the minerals and end up with a pure substance left over known as a pure protein, or as you might know it, as gluten or textured soy protein. And these are refined foods, and they need all the vitamins and all the minerals along with them the same way that the sugar and the same way that the fat needs it. So the body needs all the things that God put in the food. He didn't put things in there that were unnecessary. Everything is there for a purpose and for a reason. And we may not understand it very well, but we as His children have to take it by faith that He designed a perfect food for us. And that food was specifically designed to keep us healthy. And this is the way we must eat it. Now, so the same thing can happen when you take this protein that is refined. First of all, you can far overeat in the refined protein. And I would like to tell you what my professors tell me at the University of California, Davis, that it is impossible to get a protein deficiency if you eat enough calories of natural food to maintain your weight. It is impossible to get a protein deficiency. Do you know that fruit has as much protein in it as nuts do on a calorie-wise basis? So that if you would eat enough fruit to meet your caloric needs, you would never have a problem with a protein deficiency. And some of these natural products are very good in protein. A very balanced protein, like the potato, has an excellent quality protein in it. And potatoes have a good supply of protein. Almost 10% protein in potatoes. And you've thought all this time they're nothing but just pure starch. Well, this is a big problem. When you take these refined foods in, you can far overeat, way in excess of what you ever should, because you've removed all the bulk, all the fiber, all the water content, and you've got just nothing but the pure calories that you're taking in. And by removing all the bulk and fiber and all the water content, by the time you take in enough to where your stomach says, hey, that's about it, I'm feeling comfortable now, you have far in excess eaten what you should have. Where if you eat it in the natural form with all the bulk and the fiber and all the water content, you would just get your stomach to where it's comfortable and you quit, and you would have taken in just the right amount. God has designed it that way. I don't believe He really intended for us to have to push ourselves away from the table before we are really feeling a little comfortable. Now, I'm not saying that you should eat until you're uncomfortable, or I'm not saying you should overeat. I'm saying that there is a place where you are feeling very comfortable, and yet you could eat more. But you eat enough to where you're satisfied. And this is, I think, the place where we should be. But if you use refined foods in your diet, if you put fat or sugar or the refined proteins, your stomach will get far more calories in it than it ever should have before it comes up to that comfortable place where you're ready to push yourself away from the table. Now, God has built in safety factors in the food so that obesity is something that just would never happen if you're using these natural foods. It is just almost impossible to become overweight with natural foods. And in countries where they don't have the advantages of having these big factories that belch black smoke and produce the polyunsaturated fat and produce the sugar, obesity is something that they just don't have. As an example, Dr. Burkett, about 30 years ago, he worked over in Africa for a number of years. And Dr. Burkett wrote a number of articles telling about how the African people were just absolutely free from obesity. You just couldn't find a fat African. Well, he left and went back to England and spent 30 years back there teaching and doing research. And then he happened to make a trip back to Africa. As his plane rolled to a stop, he looked out his window. And Dr. Burkett was just flabbergasted because the first time in his life he saw a fat African. When he looked out his window, and he got out and he saw fat Africans all over the place. And he found out that the factories had moved in and started producing these refined foods now. And the Africans that lived there in the city and had come in and gotten westernized now were becoming fat. So there was such a thing as a fat African. Well, this was something that he was quite amazed over. But this is the thing that really God has built into our food safety factors. And people that become overweight in our society, it is really not their fault. It is a fault of those big factories out there belching that black smoke and the big tycoons out there that are doing all the advertising and pushing all these refined products. And the culture that we live in, where our parents teach us to eat it. And this is the way that we become overweight. Using these foods that were never intended for our diet. Because God's foods do not cause obesity. And I've gone around and around with this with my patients. I'll get patients to come in, and there's one young lady that came in that I'll always remember. Because she came in and she wants some diet pills. And I said, well, you know, I really don't prescribe diet pills. And she says, Doctor, I've tried everything and nothing works for me except the diet pills. And I said, well, have you ever tried just a simple, plain diet? I won't restrict you on the amount that you eat, but I will restrict you on what you eat. You can eat all the fruit and all the vegetables and grains and beans and things like that you want. She says, Doctor, she says, fruit is one of the most fattening things to me. If I eat apples or if I eat bananas, I just blow up like a balloon. And I said, well, you know, I really hate to disagree with you, but I don't think that fresh fruit is fattening. And she says, Doctor, I'm different. You may have other patients that don't have problems, but I know when I eat fresh fruit, it's fattening. And you know, I couldn't convince her that fresh fruit wasn't fattening. And I finally said, look, why don't you go home this weekend, and it was on a Friday, why don't you try eating fresh fruit and eating the diet I recommend to you, and we'll see you back, and if you're gaining weight, well, then we'll talk more about it. She says, Doctor, she says, there's no sense. She says, I know my body. I've had enough experience to know that fresh fruit is fattening. I said, look, you go home this weekend and you eat nothing but fresh fruit. All weekend long, three meals a day, nothing in between meals, but three meals of fresh fruit all weekend long, and then you come back. And let's weigh you the first of the week. Well, the girls at the front desk said she kind of left in a huff. She didn't get her diet pills. Well, that's what she'd come in for. Well, she was true to her word. She said she'd try it. So she went home. I found out from her husband later that she stopped at the grocery store and just bought bag after bag of fresh fruit on the way home. Well, she went home, and she just really loaded up on fresh fruit three meals a day. And her husband told me later that she ate so much fresh fruit at every meal she could hardly waddle away from the table. Well, she was back in the office first of the week. Put her on the scale, and she had lost 2 pounds. Well, how do you feel? Doctor, I'll never eat fresh fruit again as long as I live. She had almost made herself sick on fresh fruit, trying to prove me wrong. Fresh fruit just isn't fattening. It's almost impossible to eat enough fresh fruit to gain weight. There's so much water content, so much bulk and fiber. And the fructose sugar in the fruit has so few calories in it, and it's so sweet that it's just almost impossible to eat enough fruit to gain weight. And I said, well, I said, now you'll be willing to go on this diet I'm going to recommend to you. And you can eat lots of vegetables and potatoes and corn and beans. Oh, doctor, she says, I was wrong about the fresh fruit. I admit that. But now potatoes, she says, that's one thing I know. I can tell you for sure. I said, oh? I said, would you like to go on a potato diet? No, she didn't want to go on a potato diet. I says, look, I said, it's the grease you put on your potatoes that is a culprit. The potato, even the largest, nicest potato, is only around 100 calories. And you know what every level tablespoon of fat, of margarine or butter that you add to your potato? It's about 150 calories. And do you get by with only one level tablespoon of butter on a nice big large potato? No, she usually put on two. And I said, well, now you're adding about 300 calories to that poor little potato that only has 100 calories. And then you're telling me that the potato is to blame. The potato isn't to blame. It's the grease on the potato that is to blame. Well, that's true. It really is. The potatoes aren't fattening. It is. Contrary to everything you've ever heard about potatoes, they're not fattening. You can eat them until your stomach is full and you're not going to get fat on potatoes. There's just too much water content, too much bulk, too much fiber there for you to ever get fat on potatoes. It's just difficult to sit down and eat more than two big potatoes at a meal. And usually most people can't even eat one nice big potato, which is only about 100 calories. And yet the grease and the margarine never gets the blame for putting on the weight. Now, we know from experience that when we put patients on the simple natural diet of fruits, grains, and vegetables, and they use nuts in very limited quantities, as we have counsel from in the Spirit of Prophecy, that these patients invariably will lose weight. And if they don't, they're overdoing it in the nuts, or they're not getting out and getting a little exercise. But even the ones that don't exercise very much will lose some weight if they're overweight. Their body seems to head back towards a more physiologic normal. When they get off the grease and the sugar and use nuts in moderation, the body comes back to a physiologic normal. And these people will lose weight and get down to a very pleasant weight. And they're so happy about it because they're filling up every meal and their stomach is full. And they come back in the office and they kind of have a chessy cat grin on their face. And I look at them and I say, well, what's the matter? And they say, well, doctor, I just seem to be eating more than I've ever eaten in my life and I'm still losing weight and I don't understand it. And it is true. This is a beautiful thing about the natural diet that God has given to us. We can eat and feel comfortable. And we don't have to overeat. We don't have to gorge. We just eat until we're pleasantly comfortable and push away from the table, possibly before you're at the overload level. But it's a beautiful way of feeling comfortable. And that's the only way we're ever going to win this overweight problem, is if people can eat until they feel satisfied and comfortable. Because we've known that for many years, obese patients that we treat in the office, that about 99% of those patients, no matter how you treat them, they're going to weigh more in 5 years than they weigh today. I don't care what kind of drug you give them, what kind of a diet you throw at them, they're going to weigh more than they do today. So this is the only kind of a diet that we've ever really had success with in teaching people how to live, how to eat, the lifestyle that works on a permanent basis. And we have people that stay on this diet month after month, year after year, and their weight comes down to a normal level and they're just as happy as can be. So this is the way that we really have been able to treat obesity, by using God's natural diet, and it really does work. Now, we were talking about protein, how that we can refine it out and get far too much protein in our diet, far more than God ever designed and intended for us to be on. I believe God really designed us to be on a low-protein diet because He didn't make too many foods that were real high in protein. The nuts have a fairly good quantity of protein in them, but on a calorie-wise basis, fruit has just as much protein, or the whole grains. But you can't get around very much fruit. There's just not that many calories there. You'd have to eat an awful lot to get the same amount of protein you'd get in a handful of nuts or a couple of slices of bread. So we need to eat a variety of foods. We just don't want to get hung up on eating one or two different things. We want to eat a nice variety of food. And when we eat excess amount of protein, more than our body really needs, that protein has to be thrown out through the kidneys in the form of urea. And urea always needs one of the minerals to go with it. It needs something like calcium or magnesium or potassium or many other different minerals that it could take with it. It can't go alone. It needs a partner. And a mineral is always what it takes with it. Now, if it takes a mineral out of the body, the excess protein that you eat, we're really going to start being in trouble if we eat excess protein in our diet. Now let's think about this for just a moment and look at some research that has been done where this one researcher took a group of college men, and these college men were consuming an abundant amount of milk and cheese and meat and eggs and vegetables and fruit, and they were getting far in excess of the amount of calcium that is considered the everyday, regular, normal amount that we should get. And these men were eating a lot of meat in their diet too. Well, this researcher measured the calcium balance in these men. How much calcium is being taken in their diet, versus how much are they losing out of their body? An amazing discovery was made that these men were actually losing more calcium out of their bodies than they were taking in. And so the researcher gave these men a supplement of 800 milligrams of calcium a day. And then remeasured them for a calcium balance. And still these men were losing more calcium out of their bodies than they were actually taking in. So the researcher gave them 1,400 milligrams of calcium a day. And then, only 20% of those college men were in calcium balance, where they were taking in as much calcium as they were losing. Only 20%. Well, do you know that Americans are consuming more calcium than any nation on earth? They're getting more protein than any nation on earth. And the interesting thing about it is that when we look at x-rays of people in their 50s and 60s and 70s, that osteoporosis, thinning of the bones, is very common. The bones become so thin that these older ladies will just walk across the floor and their bones will break and they'll fall down and everybody will think they fell and broke their hip. The bones become so thin they just break. And yet, here Americans are consuming tremendous amounts of calcium and tremendous amounts of protein. But when we understand what really goes on, how that this protein really carries the minerals out of our bodies, the excess protein. And if we look at countries, developing countries, where these women in these developing countries may have a child every other year, and they may nurse that child for 2 years, and they may have 10 or 15 children over their lifespan. Now, not all the children live because they have poor sanitation, high infectious diseases and things, but they still may nurse that many children. And by all the standards that we set up here in this country, these women are getting a calcium-deficient diet. Plus, they're getting a protein-deficient diet. And yet these women have good, sound teeth. And their bones, when you look at their bones on the x-rays, when they're 50 and 60 and 70 years of age, they're good, solid bones. No osteoporosis or thinning of the bones. And they have plenty of calcium in their milk that they give to their children. Now, what's the problem here? With the American women, they don't nurse their children. Their bones are deteriorating and becoming very thin. Their teeth are rotting out of their head from lack of calcium. there's a real problem here, because it seems like the high meat, high milk, and high protein diet that these people are on really depletes the minerals out of the body. This was never a diet that we were really supposed to be on, because it's not how much calcium you take into your body, but it's how much you're losing. And a high protein diet is going to pull more calcium out of your body and more of all the other minerals than you can possibly take in and eat. As an example, you probably heard about these liquid protein diets where they put a whole bunch of people on these diets and then there's a whole bunch of deaths. Well, a lot of the researchers said it was that protein pulling out the potassium, and the heart muscle needs potassium to function on. And those hearts just went into fibrillation because they didn't have the potassium to protect them anymore, and those women died on those high protein diets. So it is very important that we don't get that excess amount of protein. Americans have gone stark raving mad over protein. They've got to have the big protein entrees. They've got to have protein for their breakfast, and they've got to have protein for their lunch and their dinner. And they're just far overdoing it. As I said before, it's impossible to get a protein deficiency if you eat enough of the natural food to maintain your weight or maintain your caloric metabolic needs. Now, there's many other things that we could get into in the area of high protein. We could show that high protein causes an elevated cholesterol level, causes heart disease, causes terrible kidney diseases. High proteins decrease the lifespan. A number of different kinds of cancer are caused by high protein diet. And there's many other things that we could get into in the area of a high protein diet. But I would like to, rather than lecture for an hour or two on high protein, I would like to open it up for questions. And if we have questions about the area, well, we can come back and elaborate more on it. So let's open it up for questions, and I'll try to repeat the question so everyone can hear. Yes? Okay, the question is, how do you do deep breathing? How do you breathe properly? First of all, you have to put your hand down on your abdomen. And then when you take in a deep breath, your hand should move out. Your abdomen should start to protrude. And if your chest jumps up and down, you're not breathing properly. So when you breathe in, your abdomen should come out. Your diaphragm should drop, and your abdomen should come out. Now that's proper breathing, where you're pulling the air all the way down through your lungs. The diaphragm drops down. The improper breathing is the executive style of breathing, where you top breathe up here. Just your chest comes up. That's improper breathing. That's the way the executive does. He's just under tension and pressure, and all of a sudden his body's just desperate for air, so he takes in a big deep breath like that. That's not proper breathing. That's tension breathing. And under stress and tension, we learn to breathe up here. Where the child and the baby who is not under the stress and the tension, they breathe down here with their abdomen. Watch a baby breathe sometime and watch their abdomen go up and down. That muscle down there in your abdomen, the diaphragm, that's the muscle of respiration. Even the textbooks of anatomy will tell you that these muscles up here in the chest are the accessory muscles of respiration. So proper breathing is done down here with the abdomen. When you breathe in, your abdomen should come out a ways. And when you breathe out, your abdomen goes back in. So that's the proper breathing. Yes? Most assuredly, these creams and ointments and lotions and things are absorbed in. If you just rub them into the skin, why, they'll be absorbed. I don't really feel that they're a great deal of help. We know from the scientific literature that if you put oil on the skin and then expose it to the sunlight, and we're speaking with experimental animals now, where you rub oil on their skin and then expose them to the sunlight, you can produce skin cancer this way. And this is why we don't recommend all the suntan lotions and creams and ointments and butters and things like that, because they all have a fat base to them. And I don't believe that they're really safe. I think that they're a real problem. Even that sunscreen agent paraaminobenzoic acid, PABA, that some of these sunscreen agents or sunscreen lotions have in them. That has been shown here recently to have a mutagenic action, a deforming action on the cell, where it causes a deformation of the cell. And I don't even think that one's safe. I think that the way the Lord intended for us to get out in the sun was just clean, washed skin, without any makeup on or grease or cream or anything else. Just clean, washed skin. I think that's the best way to get the sunlight. And I know a lot of people say, well, I have dry skin. Dry skin is really a symptom of poor circulation. And we really need to get out and exercise, get the sunlight, and take the sunlight moderately and slow. Otherwise, it can dry your skin out and cause you to peel. So you need to gradually work up into it. Gradually work on your exercise. Gradually work on getting the amount of fresh air and oxygen into your home. And gradually get all these things going. Because if you jump into them and overdo them, why, you can really get into trouble. As an example, get out and run 5 miles when you haven't run 5 miles in 10 years. You know, I've had patients come in to me who have sat through one of my lectures, and they've come back to me in a few weeks, and they'll say, "Doc, I sat through your lecture. I went out and tried it, and I've never been sicker in my life. I got the worst cold I've ever had in years." Well, come to find out, these patients had gone out, and they've jogged 5 miles when they hadn't jogged in years. They laid out there in the sun until they turned just as red as a lobster. And they huff and puff around trying to do their deep breathing without really, you know, understanding what they're doing. And they crash onto a radical extreme diet without ever learning how to really cook. And these people come back in and they're sick. You know, there's no question about it. And this isn't a health message. Temperance in all things. And that's one of the rules in the health message that they forgot entirely about. And I probably haven't emphasized it enough, but everything is done in moderation. We exercise only what we're able to do and then progressively work out from there. The sunlight, we gradually, bit by bit, every day. The first day, it may only be a half a minute or a minute. And then the next day, you may add a little bit of time and gradually do that. And these things bring health. They bring a glow to the skin. They don't cause a dry, flaky skin. They really bring a glow, a healthy glow. Someone that's been out in the sun, you can just see that healthy glow in their face. Okay, I believe we had a question here. Okay, now triglycerides, we got this data in this research study that we have done, but I haven't had a chance to compile it yet. I was so interested in the cholesterol that we picked out the cholesterol data out of the chemistry panels we ran on these young men, but we didn't do the triglycerides. So other researchers have said that the triglycerides aren't affected by eggs. Of course, they were on grease in their diet. So I don't really know whether or not that eggs will adversely affect the triglycerides. We know that sugar does adversely affect the triglycerides. But whether the eggs do or not, we don't know. But we know that on a grease-free diet, that there is no difference between eating eggs in your diet and not eating eggs. And yet we don't recommend eating a lot of eggs. Ellen White is very specific about, you know, limiting the eggs in our diet. And we may use a few in our cooking, or we may eat one occasionally. But other than that, I think that they, you know, shouldn't be possibly made a daily thing. Question way back here in the back. Okay, that's a good question. Is there anything that we can take beside the hormone pill for hot flashes? This is a very good question, because some of the gynecologists out there in California are really recommending a good exercise program for this problem. And they get these women out walking miles every day for their hot flashes, and that seems to have an effect. But there is something that even works better. The natural sunlight, when it strikes your skin, it actually produces estrogen in your tissue. Just like it changes the cholesterol into vitamin D, it seems to have an effect of changing that cholesterol into estrogen also. Because cholesterol and estrogen look almost identical the same way. They're both a steroid. And the interesting thing about it is that in the female, it seems to be working on the estrogen, and in the male, it seems to make testosterone, the male hormone, when sunlight strikes the skin. Well, you really have a problem getting sunlight here in the winter, I know. But I would venture to guess that there's many days during the wintertime that are bright and clear. And even though it's cold, you can sunbathe. Now let me tell you how. You need to get out of the wind. Have you ever parked your car out on a bright sunny day, but yet it's cold and windy? Have you ever parked your car and gone shopping or something, and then come back and jump in your car, and you're surprised how nice and warm it is inside the car, and yet the heater hasn't been on? Well, the same thing works if you can make yourself a sunbathing area that is just open at the top and the sides are protected so the wind can't come and blow through it. And yet the sunlight can shine in at the top. You'll be surprised. You can have days that are down to zero. It is so cold you can see your breath blowing with every breath. And I've experienced this personally. I know I've lain there and I could see my breath with every breath, and yet I was so warm that the sun felt hot on my back. That burning effect when you get that sun on your back, you get that. And yet it was so cold. But if a cloud comes over and covers the sun, and the temperature is down around zero or a little above, oh, you better get inside the house quick. It'll freeze you quick out there with only a bathing suit on. But really, if the sun is bright, you'd be surprised at how cold it really is. In fact, up in the high Alps is where they used to take these tuberculosis patients. And the temperature was always, you know, lots of times up there below freezing. And yet these patients would be out there lying in the sun. They knew the secret of blocking out the wind, putting shelters around where the wind was blowing. And today would just be a beautiful day for sunbathing. Even though the wind is cold and sharp, you block that off and you'd be surprised how warm it is. Yes. Okay, the question was, is really there was a statement made about a certain herb, black cohosh, being able to take care of these hot flashes, a certain herb. Now, I don't object to herbs for simple home remedies, but I do object to them if they're used in place of the health message, in place of the natural remedies. If you're not getting the exercise and the sunlight and the diet and the whole thing put together, but you're using these herbs for your ailments and you're not following the health message, then I object to the herbs. But Ellen White was specific about using some herbs for simple home remedies, and I think they can be used for that. But to use them chronically, day in, day out, you know, year in, year out, I think you can get into trouble with them. Because after all, coffee is a natural herb. Tea is a natural herb. And tobacco is a natural herb. People chew tobacco, but they get into trouble because they chronically use it. Oh, year in, year out. And I think any of your herbs, you can get into trouble that way too. So using them as a simple home remedy, I really don't object to. But using them as a chronic thing continually without really getting to the health message, getting the life-giving, health-dealing power that comes from the health message, then there's a real problem. Okay. The question that was really asked, and there was a statement also made with this one, was that the minerals have decreased in our food from the 1920s until now by 40%. And because of that, we should take supplements and things like that, because the minerals have decreased. Now, we've got a real problem here, and I want to explain it to you very carefully, because there's a lot of people that think that vitamins and minerals are the answer to their poor health problems. And the vitamins and minerals will never take the place of the health message. The vitamins and minerals, we could say they're like an herb or a drug or whatever that we're taking to supplement something. Now, I don't deny that with the commercial agriculture, where we're using nothing but the major nitrogen and phosphorus and potassium on the soil, and we're not adding all the trace minerals back to the soil that we're taking out in the form of food, that we're going to have a decrease in the minerals, in especially in certain things like the leafy greens, the grass and things like that. These things will show the mineral depletion. Now, the problem here is that I have never really seen some real good studies where the same method was used for testing the food back in the 1920s as was used for testing it today. They use different methods, and how do you, you know, compare them? Because we know that one method may not be as accurate as the other one. We know we have much more accurate methods of testing today than we did back 40 years ago. And so how do we really know? I would love to get some documentation and some data. And the one that asked the question says they haven't. I'll just love to get a hold of it, because I really know that from what Ellen White says, that we should get out in the country and raise our own fruits and vegetables. That's really up there, you know, the high recommendation of what we really should do. And if we did that, if we all got back to the soil and really learned natural farming and learned to put things back in the soil the way that it should be, we wouldn't have any problem with worrying about the mineral depletion and worrying about the pesticides and all the other contaminants that may be getting into our food. So this is the ultimate. But there's some of us that may live in the apartments. There's some of us that may be in school or may be involved in a job where we can't get out in the country and raise our own food. Well, if that's the problem, I have some good news for you, because many of the chronic ailments and diseases that come in to us, we put them on a grocery store diet, but they live out of the produce section of the grocery store, and these people get well. And this is the exciting part, where the heart disease, chest pain, all different kinds of problems, they come in and they get on this grocery store diet, eating the fruits and vegetables out of the grocery store, and they get well. But they have to stay off the grease and the sugar and the high protein supplements and things like that. Now, there seems to be enough minerals left in the food that your body can get what it needs. Now, maybe a few years down the line, there may be some real deficiencies, because I know that the trace element problem in the soil is getting to be a critical thing in many of the agricultural areas in California. Even the plants are having trouble getting enough trace minerals to survive on and do well. And they're continually trying to add some back, and they get a little too much, and it's a toxic dose. And it's a real problem trying to balance those minerals back in the soil. So there's real good counsel that we need to get out. And I think as the days roll on and we get closer and closer to the end, that God's people need to be out in the country, and God's people need to be raising their own fruits and vegetables. It's just really important. I hope I've answered your question. Okay. I believe there's another question here. Okay, the question is, must you expose your skin to get the benefit from the sunlight? And the answer to that question is yes, you must expose your skin. But I really want to say that you shouldn't ever dress immodestly just to get the sun. If you live in a neighborhood where you have neighbors all looking at you, why, you certainly, you know, should dress appropriately to be doing the garden work. Now maybe appropriately out here is wearing slacks. In California, it's wearing some short shorts. But whatever, you need to dress appropriately for the occasion that you're doing. You can get a lot of sunlight on your face and on your arms, and if you do wear shorts, on your legs. And where if you're in a sunbathing area that's very private, why, you can put a bathing suit on and whatever, but it's appropriate dress. But you really... Yes. And sometimes for a therapy purpose, we don't get enough on the face, even though they're out for many hours out of doors. We really need to get their body exposed for therapy reasons, when we're really treating them for a disease, a problem. But a healthy person, you know, may not need to have their body exposed. They may get enough just on their face and their arms and hands. Yes. Okay. Well, the question was, the minute I get out in the sun, I develop all kinds of problems with my skin. This really gets into a complicated problem, because I've just completed a manuscript for a complete book on sunlight that we're hoping Grosset and Dunlap will publish. But anyway, the interesting thing about it is that many times you use a soap that has a certain chemical in it that's very common in soaps that many people are very sensitive to. It causes a photosensitivity. And when you wash with this soap and then you go out on the skin, it causes a real severe reaction right now. And this could be, I'm not saying this is what's happening to you, but this could be one of the things. Many of the cosmetics and creams and things like that also contain this chemical. So there's many things that we need to be concerned about, and you should try just washing with water. And water is a real cleansing agent. You stay in it long enough, it'll just crinkle your skin up and turn it white. But just try washing with water sometime and then getting out and take the sun very, very carefully. Just maybe only a half minute the first day and maybe a half minute the next. And gradually increase it and see if that doesn't work, but get your diet right first. Well, the thing that isn't right is his diet if he's developed this thing, if he's developed this skin cancer. See? So he needs to get his diet right so the sunlight doesn't form all those free radicals and that rancid fat in there. That's the thing that you really need to work on hard. Okay, question back here. Okay, first I'd like to say I'll kind of work towards the back in this side, and then I'll start here at the front and work towards the back on this side, so I try not to miss anybody. Okay, the question was about using milk and sugar. I think we have counsel in the spirit of prophecy about using large amounts of milk and sugar and eggs together. Well, you can get fermentation going with the sugar and the milk, and of course the sugar is a refined product, and this is something we already talked somewhat about. And large quantities of milk, you can overdo the amount of protein you get and cause problems. You can this is probably one reason for not using large amounts of milk and sugar, yes. Okay, is there another question? Yes. I think it's a disaster. The question was about using lecithin to reduce cholesterol in the blood. By using these polyunsaturated fats, you really, and lecithin can be a polyunsaturated fat or a lipid. That's what it really is. It just has a phosphorus molecule in one of the areas where one of the triglyceride or one of the fatty acid chains should be. But it really is something that people take to try to lower their blood cholesterol. Now let me tell you about an experiment that was done with polyunsaturated fat so you'll understand that a low blood cholesterol doesn't necessarily mean that you're safe when you're using grease in your diet. And this particular study was done using monkeys, and they took these monkeys and divided them into three groups, and they gave them all the same diet, but they gave them a different kind of fat in each diet. The first monkey group got corn oil, the second monkey group got butter, and the last monkey group got peanut oil. Now at a few months, they drew some blood from these monkeys and checked their cholesterol levels, and they noticed that the group on the butter had the very highest cholesterol, as you would probably expect. And the group on the peanut oil had the very lowest cholesterol. Now remember that. The group on the peanut oil had the very lowest cholesterol. And by all of our criteria, you'd say, hey, that peanut oil is a wonder. Wow, I really need to get on the peanut oil because it really lowers the blood cholesterol. Well, at the end of the study, when they autopsied these monkeys and looked at their arteries, they found out that the group on the corn oil had 62% of the surface of their arteries covered with hardening of the arteries and atherosclerosis. The group on the butter had 82%. And the group on the peanut oil had 93% of the surface of their arteries covered with cholesterol and atherosclerotic hardening of the artery plaques. 93%. So you see, the difference in the fat, the peanut oil was worse than butter, and yet it gave the very lowest cholesterol, and the butter had the very highest cholesterol. So what is lecithin doing in your body when it lowers the cholesterol? See, we don't know. There's not any real good studies about that. Plus, we know that there's even been two deaths in the medical literature that lecithin was taken and it's been implicated in causing those deaths. So it's a refined chemical that we really shouldn't use in our diet. Now, I've been criticized for telling this experiment about the monkeys, how the peanut oil was worse than the butter fat. Because the criticism is that they fed these monkeys large amounts of cholesterol. And it is true, they gave them a tremendous amount of cholesterol in their diet. And I had to go to the original researcher to find out why they gave them so much cholesterol. And I found a very interesting fact about monkey physiology. And that is that monkeys don't absorb cholesterol very easy. You have to give them tremendous amounts of cholesterol before they'll absorb it. Their intestinal tract just seems to reject it. For humans, you can just feed them an egg with a little bit of fat of some kind, and boy, right now the cholesterol level is going to shoot way up. But with monkeys, you have to give them very large amounts of cholesterol to get them to absorb enough to produce hardening of the arteries. Well, this is the reason why they gave them so much cholesterol. And I know I was criticized in one of our denominational papers. They didn't mention my name, but they said, you'd had to eat so many peanuts, or you'd had to do some tremendous thing to get this much peanuts or something. I don't know. The logic wasn't good anyway, but the interesting thing about it is the amount of cholesterol that it took to produce hardening of the arteries with butter made it even more severe when peanut oil was used. So, and you notice that the corn oil even produced atherosclerosis also. So if you're going to use the monkeys as a model for producing hardening of the arteries, you have to give them a lot of cholesterol, or else don't use the monkey as a model. But when the monkey is used as a model, peanut oil produces much worse atherosclerosis than hardening the arteries. But this is an experiment that is used, and it's an experiment that we can kind of relate back to humans, but it's still done in animals, and we have to be very careful with animal studies. We don't know exactly if it relates exactly to the humans or not, but chances are that it probably is very close, because monkeys and their experimental data that we get from them seems to fit with humans fairly close. So I would suggest that peanut oil combined with cholesterol may produce worse hardening of the arteries than butter. Yes, question back here. Natural diet is hard to satisfy your appetite. Well, a natural diet that doesn't have very much fat in it. It is true, it's hard to really get satisfied. Fairly easy. But if you're including some of the high-fat foods in it, like nuts or avocados or olives or some of the seeds or possibly a little milk or cream, then you have no problem with the satiety value, with the feeling comfortable after you've eaten a meal. But you do have to be careful with those things so that you don't overeat. But it's much easier to eat those things and feel comfortable than it is to use margarine or oil or mayonnaise, because those things don't have any filling effect at all, where the natural fats have a filling effect. Yes. Oh, most assuredly, we really should be careful and not use too many, but she was using the nuts to make up recipes and things. And in the recipes that we have tried to put out, we've tried to hold the nuts down to 1/6 to 1/10 of the recipe. And I know we've gotten a lot of severe criticism about that. People say, well, look at all those nuts in your recipes. Well, you know, we just tried to follow the spirit of prophecy counsel. So not all the recipes have nuts in them. We've taken them out. But some of them do, because it adds a flavor and adds a richness to the dish that people are used to and people are demanding and they want. So... Oh, most assuredly, those are very high fat foods too, and we need to be careful with those. Let's see, I believe there's another question back there. Yes. Okay, the question is about vitamin B12 and whether you can get vitamin B12 from just using fruits, grains, and vegetables and nuts. or whether you have to go and use the animal products to get these elements. Well, there's good indication in the medical literature that polyunsaturated fats burn the vitamin B12 out of your body. There's good indication that the high protein supplements will burn the vitamin B12 out of your body. So now you take somebody who is a strict vegetarian. They don't use eggs and they don't use milk. They're not getting any B12 in their diet at all. But this person is a real veggie burger hound. And this person fries those veggie burgers in the polyunsaturated fat. And they use lots of soy meat that 70-80% of that is polyunsaturated fat or is in the form of fat, where you get 70-80% fat out of those things, that you eat those things and you're a strict vegetarian, it's not going to be long until all the vitamin B12 stores in your body are depleted and your own body can manufacture some vitamin B12 by intestinal action and by some of the bacteria in your mouth, but it can't produce very much, but it can produce some. But using all those refined foods, you're going to burn that vitamin B12 out of your body so rapidly that your body doesn't have a chance to replace it. And you're going to develop pernicious anemia and bring disrepute upon the whole health message, upon the whole message of getting back to a very simple natural diet. I don't believe so. I talked to Dr. Deshaies, the medical secretary of the General Conference, and he says that he has some evidence now that it's found in kelp. So I've heard of him, yes. Well, I know, but I prefer to go by some of the real modern data, and Dr. Register has really done some real research in that. Dr. Register, professor of nutrition at Loma Linda University. And Dr. Register says that there's really no vitamin B12 in any of the vegetables and fruits and grains and seeds that he has tested. I don't think you can draw that conclusion, because your own body, if you're not using all those refined foods that burns the vitamin B12 out of your body, then your own body will manufacture enough to keep you supplied with all you'd ever need. Especially if you're not using the strong antiseptics to kill all the bacteria in your mouth, if you just keep your teeth clean with a good toothbrush. But if you take antibiotics and things like that, you're going to kill a lot of the intestinal bacteria also. But I think that you probably will be able to produce enough, especially on a simple natural diet, to where you'd never run into a problem with pernicious anemia. Now, I don't have a lot of proof. Dr. Register did a study where he showed the more fiber and more bulk you got in your diet, the more B12 was produced in the intestine. So that is some evidence pointing more and more towards this. So I think that there's more and more evidence showing that on a strict vegetarian diet, eating the food the way it is grown, that you'd never have a problem with a vitamin B12 deficiency. It's only when you use the oil in your diet and the grease and the high protein supplements that you're going to burn all the vitamin B12 out of your body and get pernicious anemia. Okay, was there another question way in the back? Okay, well, let's start up here at the front then. Yes? Is it true that olives cut serum cholesterol? Now, this is a question I don't know. We know that the olives are beneficial in consumption or tuberculosis. We know that they're beneficial as a laxative. Whether they cut the serum cholesterol, I don't know. I know the olive oil is more of a neutral fat. It's not a saturated or a polyunsaturated fat. It's kind of in the middle. But whether it lower the blood cholesterol or not, I don't know. It may lower it a slight amount, but really I don't think that's the objective anyway. You get on a natural diet, your cholesterol will come back down to where it should be anyway. And always eat the oil as it comes in the olive, with all the vitamins and the minerals and everything that God put in there with it. Okay, let's move on back now. Yes. The question was about a hiatus hernia. Now these hernias, like hemorrhoids and like varicose veins and like a hiatus hernia, are all thought to be due to a low fiber diet, where you eat a lot of these refined foods, white flours, sugars, oils, refined proteins, and you use a lot of milk and eggs and meat and things like that that has no fiber in bulk, and your intestine has to work so hard, and there's so much pressure exerted to get that low residue diet down the intestine. Let me explain that just a little bit. Have you ever taken a tube of toothpaste and been just about out of toothpaste and tried to get one more brushing out of that toothpaste, and you just started to squeeze, and you know how much pressure you have to put on that tube to get that last little bit out? Now contrast that with a nice big full tube that you just picked up down at the store, and you take the cap off, and just the pressure of your hand on that tube maybe will give you far more toothpaste than you really wanted to brush your teeth with that first time. So the toothpaste, in other words, moves out very easy when that tube is full. The same thing happens in your bowel. When your bowel is full with all the bulk and the fiber that is supposed to be there, the food moves down the bowel almost effortlessly. It doesn't take a strain to push it down. Where if there is not much bulk and fiber in there, it takes a tremendous effort. And they actually have people swallow little balloons that has pressure measuring devices in those balloons. And they feed them various diets. And they can see the tremendous pressure the bowel has to put on that food to move it down in a low fiber diet. Where with a high fiber diet, it's almost effortlessly, very little pressure. So with these hernias, it's because there's so much pressure in the abdomen that is forcing that food down that it actually starts to blow out this hiatus hernia, and the intestines and the esophagus starts to pull back up inside the chest, and the diaphragm muscle actually splits. And the same thing with varicose veins. Those blood vessels just blow out and swell up with all the pressure that's in them. So this is a problem that's caused by a low fiber diet, and the very best way to handle this problem is to really get on a good natural diet and get on a good exercise program and a good deep breathing program. Try to strengthen that muscle down there. I believe there's another question here. Yes. Fruits and vegetables. I think we have some counsel about not eating fruits and vegetables. And by vegetables, I classify the root vegetables and the grassy kinds of vegetable leaves, contrasting the fruit vegetables or the fruits. In other words, possibly the stone fruits like peaches and apricots and pears or whatever kinds of fruit like that, maybe they shouldn't be eaten with the kinds of things like root vegetables or chard or kale or things like that. But there's all kinds of shades of gray in these vegetables and fruits. And, you know, where do you classify them? And so many things that we always consider as vegetables are really known as fruits, like squash and beans and things like that. And then so many things that we use as vegetables, like in a vegetable salad, we'll put maybe some avocado in it. Well, avocado is a fruit. So, you know, where do we draw the line? And we use tomatoes with vegetables. Well, is tomatoes a fruit or a vegetable? It's really a fruit. So we need to have some understanding about, you know, what we're going to call a fruit and what a vegetable. And you go to Encyclopedia, why they even have some things called fruit vegetables. Because they're really a fruit, but they're used as a vegetable, like the squash and things like that. So there's all kinds of shades of gray, and you really need to get an understanding. But I think if you really, you know, are going to polarize things, you talk about the stone fruit versus the root vegetables and things like that. And possibly, you know, try to avoid something like that, especially if your digestion isn't too good. Okay, let's move on back. Yes. Once your system has been abused by using these polyunsaturated fats without the protecting minerals with them, is this process reversible? There are some researchers that are working on certain chemicals and drugs that are able to reverse some of these things, reverse some of these pigment changes in the cell by using these drugs on these experimental animals. Now, this usually tells me that nature has a way of reversing those things itself if the right conditions were applied. As an example, the Mayo Clinic has found a drug that is able to dissolve gallstones. Well, this is an interesting fact. We've had some patients that have come through our clinic that we've put on the natural diet that had x-ray documented gallstones, and then after they'd been on the diet for a number of months, we'd re-x-ray them and we'd find out the gallstones were gone. So I do believe that the body, just like the plan of salvation, it is something that I believe that God is working with us on. And every day of our lives, we should be becoming more and more sanctified. And we know it's the work of a lifetime, and that God is at work in there, and not only spiritually, but I believe He's at work physically, trying to restore our bodies back to the original pattern. And so I believe that if we stop now, that we may have some permanent damage, but I believe that the power that God has with His natural remedies and all the power He has flowing through those natural remedies, plus the energizing power of the Holy Spirit in our lives, I really believe that the healing power is miraculous. Okay, question on towards the back. Yes. Okay, the question was about sunshine working on high blood sugar and high blood pressure? Or what? On just the blood sugar. Okay, this is a good question because sunlight really has an effect upon the carbohydrate metabolizing system in the body. And we're not exactly sure how it works, but it seems to work almost like insulin. It has an insulin-like effect, sunlight does. So that insulin is a great bodybuilder. It'll start storing glycogen in the tissues when you it'll take the sugar out of your bloodstream and store it in the muscles as glycogen and store it in the liver as glycogen. And the fascinating thing about it is that sunlight will do the same thing. Sunlight will take the blood sugar and lower the blood sugar and store that as glycogen in your muscles and in your liver. And as you know, glycogen is what you use for fuel when you're out there jogging or you're not eating for a while and you need some extra energy. Well, that can come out as blood sugar then. And the sunlight seems to have almost the same effect as insulin does. And if you get out and get regular sun baths, you should be able to decrease your insulin significantly. You know, those of you who take insulin. But there's a lot more than just the sunlight. You have to get good exercise, those that are diabetics. You have to get the proper air, proper breathing. And in addition to that, you have to have the simple natural diet. Because fat in your diet is going to raise the blood sugar. It's not the sugar. It's the fat that causes the blood sugar to go up. Let me tell you an experiment that was done where a researcher took a group of college men and he wanted to get a standard diet for doing a glucose tolerance test. Have any of you had a glucose tolerance test? Well, there's a few. That's where they give you a big slug of sugar and then they follow your blood sugar for a number of hours to just see what happens to your blood sugar. Well, this researcher wanted to set up a standard diet because he just felt that everybody is on their own kind of a diet and he was getting all kinds of different results, so he decided to feed these men a high-protein diet to see what effect this high-protein diet would have on their glucose tolerance test. So he took a large group of young men from college, fed them the high-protein diet, did a glucose tolerance test on them. They had a what you'd call an average glucose tolerance test. Their blood sugar really didn't go too high. And then he said, well, he says, I'm going to jump right in. He says, I know the sugar is the thing that causes the differences in the glucose tolerance test, so I'll just give these men a high sugar diet. So for about a week, he fed them just sugar and everything. And then he did a glucose tolerance test on them. He was kind of surprised when he got the results back. They kind of had a normal glucose tolerance test. And he says, well, there's only one other thing. He says, that's fat. And he says, I guess I'll go ahead and just complete the experiment. So he fed them a high fat diet. He had them spread mayonnaise and margarine on everything. And about a week later, when he tested them, he did the glucose tolerance test. He made a diagnosis in every one of those young college men that they were diabetic. Their blood sugar went so high. Fat causes the blood sugar to go up. And I could go into all the enzyme patterns, how the fat breaks down into acetyl coenzyme A, and acetyl coenzyme A stimulates pyruvate carboxylase, and that stimulates gluconeogenesis, but you wouldn't probably understand it anyway. But the thing is that fat is the thing that stimulates the blood sugar to go way up. So we really need to worry about the fat in the diabetic's diet. So there's a lot of information we get into about this, but the more simple and natural diet, and there's even some literature in some of the internal medicine journals showing that more raw food in the diet will help lower the blood sugar also. So a diabetic needs to get a lot of raw food in their diet, and they really need to go on a total program of a natural diet. Yes? Okay, this is a question about taking a drug to prevent a disease from coming back. Now, Guillain-Barré syndrome is a disease that's caused by a virus. And it can be many different kinds of virus that can cause this. And many think that this may be one of the autoimmune diseases where the body becomes a little bit allergic to itself. But all the evidence isn't in yet. But I even have some evidence showing that polyunsaturated fats will prevent this Guillain-Barré syndrome from coming back or help it because the polyunsaturated fats knock out the immune system. And the immune system is just too strong in these patients. It starts to eat up their own cells. But those cells that are being eaten up are cells that have been severely mutilated by the virus. And the answer isn't to suppress the immune system with these polyunsaturated fats, but to beef up the immune system so that it can destroy the virus that are doing the damage. So really the answer to this problem is to build your immune system up with lots of hydrotherapy, with lots of sunbathing, exercise, with the whole natural diet and everything in the natural remedies, and I don't think you'd ever get this virus problem that would be contributing towards the Guillain-Barré syndrome. I certainly wouldn't say that you would have to do that. No, I don't know all the factors involved. I don't know about your immune system, whether your immune system is a deficient immune system, whether you have a genetic problem. There's a lot of ramifications, and it's very difficult to answer personal questions, you know, up here in the front when I don't know all the facts. So don't pin me down too hard on that one. Vitamin E? Well, I think it's wonderful. Grains and vegetables are just loaded with vitamin E. Well, you know, I think if you ate a natural diet, your need for vitamin E on an outside source wouldn't be very high. I can't see that you would need it if you were eating all the whole grains and the vegetables and things like that. Okay, question more towards the back. Yes? Sunlight and radiation? Well, radiation has an effect upon the body very similar to sunlight in some ways, and then it's very different in other ways. Radiation or X-ray actually causes some of the tissues to become ionized or turn into kind of free radicals like we talked about. And vitamin E and vitamin C and carotene can actually cut down the damage that the radiation does. So the X-rays and things can become less harmful if you have lots of vitamin E and carotene and vitamin C and selenium in your diet. So, but X-rays have a destructive effect in other ways, where the sunlight has only a beneficial effect. Well, if you're not used to the sunlight, it can be very troublesome. It can cause problems. It can even make you not feel well inside. So you need to gradually, it's a very powerful medicine. And you need to gradually get out and get more and more every day. Especially the fair-skinned, blonde people. They need to be very careful with the sunlight. But the darker-skinned people, like myself, I can get out and stay out in the sunlight all day and it doesn't seem to bother me. So other people have to be very careful with it. And everybody is a different individual and everybody needs to work out a program of health for themselves. Okay, is there one last question in the back? Yes. Okay, is the oil that floats up to the top of the peanut a free fat? Well, let's think about it a minute. If you'd put that oil on a piece of paper, would it make an oil stain? Most assuredly it would. Does it feel oily and greasy? Well, then most assuredly it's a free fat. Now, the problem comes here. If you were to eat just regular peanuts, chew them up, you could never break them down to the place where you'd get all that free fat out, because that free fat is on the inside of the cell of those peanuts. And peanuts are made up of cells, just like our own bodies are made up of cells. But it's those big, powerful machines that are able to crush right down to the very cell and release that fat out of there that happens when you process those peanuts and make peanut butter out of it. So peanuts are something that is true, they're a natural food, but I believe that they've just been ground up way too fine, and they can be a problem if used excessively especially. Now, if you were to have a little peanut butter on an occasion where you, say, weren't getting cholesterol in your diet at the same time, and this peanut butter was something you had as a little treat on an occasion, maybe not every meal, but maybe three or four times a week or something like that, I don't think you'd really run into too much trouble with some of the nut butters. But it's when we take these nut butters and use them on everything, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and continually use them along with a lot of the cholesterol in the diet, I think we may get into trouble, especially with all the free fat, as oily and fatty as peanut butter is. But we don't have a lot of good research into that. It's only speculation that the peanut butter is oily enough and greasy enough to where it could actually cause a problem with cholesterol absorption. But I would go very slowly with it, and peanuts are really to be used very sparingly from the Spirit of Prophecy. You look up what she says about the peanut, and she says it's something that we should use very sparingly. And she even puts it off in a class all by itself, even separate from the other nuts that she says we should use sparingly. So I think we have good indication that the peanut is something that let's be a little cautious with. Okay, let's start back here at the front. And Oh, another question back here. All right. You know, I miss... Yes, what was the disease condition? Okay, well, you know, I think that we've got a very particular problem here, and we should probably talk about it on a personal basis and not get involved with a whole audience, because it is a very specialized thing. And carotene may help out. All the other vitamins and minerals may help out too. A natural diet, a low-fat diet, would probably be very beneficial in this whole thing. But as far as, you know, getting into the little nitty-gritty of the pathology and exactly what would be going on, I think we probably ought to skip over that. Okay, yes.
You know, I used to use a lot of total cereal.
Okay, the statement that was made was that a lot of total cereal was used, and it has a lot of sugar in it, and that's true. And then the person switched over to shredded wheat, which doesn't have any sugar, and it's a much more healthy cereal in many ways. And let me give you another way that it's healthy over total. Total, they add powdered milk to. A casein, they call it. That's just a chemical name for powdered milk. The protein from the powdered milk. And what happens here is they add other things to this total cereal. They add vitamin D, which is really a disaster. In fact, many of your breakfast cereals have vitamin D added to it. And instead of getting your vitamin D from the sun that is controlled, where you don't get an excess amount of vitamin D, you get it by your mouth, and the body has no controls over that. So you take in that kind of vitamin D, and you are going to just take it in, and that is going to be absorbing calcium, and depositing calcium around in your joints and in your arteries and all kinds of other problems. In fact, there's a lot of research showing that vitamin D given to experimental animals produces atherosclerosis when they take it by their mouths. So there's a real problem, and I know they lace the cereals with it, they lace the milk, they lace the macaroni products with it, they lace baby foods with it, they lace your vitamin pills with it, they just put it in everything. And the recommendation is to get 400 international units of vitamin D, but the problem is the average American is getting about 2,800 units of vitamin D. And many authorities are saying that the 400 units is toxic. That's probably way too much. So we have a real problem with taking these chemicals or these vitamins they add back to the cereals, like the vitamin D. And then the casein, or the dried milk. When they dry milk, they spray dry it. They spray it out into the air, and it dries out there in the air and falls down in the form of powder. Now, this spray dry method, the cholesterol is exposed to the oxygen that is in the powdered milk. And even in skim milk, there's about 10 milligrams of cholesterol per reconstituted quart. And this spray dry process exposes that cholesterol to the air. And that causes that cholesterol to turn rancid. And then when you take that into your body and that cholesterol gets in your arteries, it causes tremendous damage in there. It's what they call angiotoxic. And to make matters worse, you go down to the grocery store and buy milk. Say, buy your 2% milk. I don't know, they sell 2% milk here? In this? Okay. You buy your 2% milk, not only is it laced with vitamin D, but it's also laced with powdered milk. They reconstitute a lot of it. And they say, oh, protein fortified, to try to make it more saleable. But it's really a problem. It's really best if you could get the milk right from the cow. That's the ideal way to get it. And going from ideal down the steps, you know, it's really a problem. I know out there in California, we have a dairy that sells raw milk. And you can buy this raw milk and pasteurize it yourself. It's really very easy. In fact, the early Adventists, they'd always bring the milk to a boil. And this would pasteurize it for them. This is the way that Ellen White did it. And a lot of the other early Adventists just boil the milk. But if you want to pasteurize it, if you want to write these figures down, you bring it up to 161 degrees for 16 seconds. You can do that with a candy thermometer, and you can pasteurize it. But whatever, it probably should be sterilized, especially, you know, if your cows aren't really thoroughly tested for brucellosis and tuberculosis and all kinds of other diseases. So anyway, that's the best way to get your milk, is to buy just plain milk from the cow and use it that way, where they haven't had a chance to adulterate it and add a whole bunch of things to it. I'm sorry I got off so far on your total cereal. So, yes. Well, I don't like it. I don't like the milk meddled with at all. I think it should come right from the cow to the consumer and not be homogenized and vitamin D-ized and proteinized and all kinds of other things done to it. I just don't like it at all, the way they meddle with it. Okay, yes. Well, I think goat's milk is very similar to cow's milk. Some say it's more digestible. It has a similar amount of fat and cholesterol in it. And all of these dairy products, one thing I want to get clear to you is that we use them in moderation. And if you use them, why, use them in moderation. Use them as a little seasoning agent, or use them very moderation on your cereal in the morning or something like that. Don't go overboard and use a lot of them. There's no fiber, no bulk. You can get far in excess of the protein and other things that you really should have. So be careful with them, but use them, you know, as the Lord leads. Yes? What about high blood pressure? It seems like every one of the natural remedies lowers high blood pressure. From exercise, sunlight, deep breathing, diet, hydrotherapy. You know, you can just go down the list, and they're all wonderful for that. So just start using any one of the natural remedies and your blood pressure is going to come down. So blood pressure seems to be one of the easiest diseases to treat. Yes? Well, the patients that we've had experience with, after we get a chance to work with them on their diet and their exercise and sunlight and things, their blood pressure is lower than when they were on the pills when they get off the pills. Okay, yes. Okay, the question is about allergies, and I'm glad you brought that up. Because allergies are a very interesting area. They really are a stress disease where your body just doesn't seem to be able to produce the anti-stress hormones like cortisone the way it should. Your adrenal glands are just exhausted. And you remember we talked about this morning about the outdoor air, the charged air that really revitalized your adrenal glands? And the sunlight has been shown to do the same thing. The sunlight will build up your tolerance to stress. And hydrotherapy can help out. And the simple natural diet, getting off the things that are stressing the body, like the grease and the other things, will help out considerably in fighting allergies. In fact, many people that come into me and they say, oh, I can't eat strawberries, I can't eat watermelon, I can't eat this and that and the other thing. After they've gone on a simple natural diet for a number of months, I tell them to go back and try some of those things. And they come back in very pleasantly surprised that now they're able to eat those things that they could never eat before. So whether it's nasal allergies, rhinitis, or whether it's allergies to food and things like that, building up the body with a health message is the answer to those problems. And it's not taking the drugs or whatever. Stop taking the allergy shots. I think that's going to be something that you'll have to do. But the closer you get back to God's natural program, I think the more you're going to be getting away from all these other things. Okay, last question.
You hinted earlier that soil depletion is a real thing. Now, in view of this, are multivitamins or any vitamins okay?
Okay, the question is about soil depletion and multivitamins. I don't know of any proof, now maybe I can be corrected on this, but I don't know of any proof that vitamins are depleted in commercially grown foods. Now I know that minerals are a problem, but I think if you'll check with the people that are probably most in authority, the Rodale people that are right here close to you, I believe in Emmaus, I think they admit that the vitamins in commercially grown foods are probably the same as they are in the organically grown foods. But the mineral content may be different. So I don't think there's really a lot of argument saying that commercially grown foods. Now, of course, if you pick these commercially grown foods green, and then you ship them for miles, and then you leave them sitting in the warehouse or in the cooler for months, and then you bring them to the grocery store and put them on the shelf there, and they're gradually sold, I think that, you know, you're going to lose a lot of vitamins. There's no question about it. But the mineral content, if it's decreasing, then the problem would it be all right to take some extra minerals in the diet? And I don't know, maybe we could use some kelp and get the extra minerals that way. And this would be a natural product that we could take. But taking bare minerals, I would be a little worried about it, even if they're so-called organically chelated minerals. Your body may pick up more of those than it really should. You don't know. You can imbalance the minerals very rapidly. And we could spend an hour talking about mineral imbalances. How if you take too much copper, it runs the zinc out of your body. If you take zinc pills, it runs the copper and manganese out of your body. And all kinds of interactions like that that I think we have to be very careful with. And I think the ideal way is to get out and raise your own food. That's the ideal way. And if you can't do that, I think getting the natural foods in the grocery store or getting them growing, you know, the best way possible would be the next step in the thing. But there's a lot of problems with trying to live off these commercially grown foods. I realize that. But the answer may not be in the vitamin pill, the multiple vitamin pill with all the vitamin D in it. You know, I think it's really a disaster. Okay, I very much have enjoyed being with you folks. You've been a very gracious and kind audience here in Pennsylvania, and I really appreciated being with you. And I would like to say that you're going to run into a lot of controversy about the health message. When you follow it, you're going to run into opposition. And it really is not something that you have to worry about, because we have a more sure word of prophecy. And the prophecy that we have and the prophet that we have fits right in with the scientific literature so beautifully that it just is impossible for me to believe that there isn't a lot of truth in the health message. That exercise, that the simple, natural, grease-free diet, the sunlight and hydrotherapy and the vital air that we can breathe is very, very healthful and will just cure many diseases. And we're getting more and more proof on this as far as healing patients. So I believe that we have a more sure word of prophecy, and the very diet that Ellen White has given to us and was given in the first couple of chapters of Genesis is the diet that we as a people should be on. And when someone wants to say something about our diet or wants to criticize it, you know, all we have to say is, thus saith the Lord. Here it is right there. And the burden of proof lies upon them to prove that their refined oils and their refined sugars and things like that, that they're safe and that it'll keep them from getting sick. So we have a lot of good word from the science as well as from the spirit of prophecy in the Bible that the diet that God has given to us is the very best, and that God is right now preparing a people to meet Him.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. Free listening of this message and over 7,000 other presentations by more than 100 speakers on 50 different topics is now available on our American Christian Ministries mobile app for Android and Apple devices, and on our secure website. You may also order presentations online at AmericanChristianMinistries.org or call 800-233-4450. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help to prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.